the Best of Times Radio Hour, live on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel, a show dedicated to seniors and boomers in Northwest Louisiana. Here's your host, Gary Kaligas.
Good morning, Arklatex listeners. I'm Gary Kaligas, the publisher of the Best of Times, the only magazine and radio show for mature adults in Northwest Louisiana. I do thank you for tuning into our show today and also thanking those who might be listening via the internet at www.710keel.com. Also thanking those who might be listening via the Keel application on their Apple and Android devices. We also thank those who might be listening to this via podcast on Apple Podcast, as well as visiting thebestoftimesnews.com to view a podcast of this show and many of our previously broadcast shows. We do thank AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Tenant Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer for being the exclusive sponsors of this radio show to provide you with beneficial information each and every Saturday morning. In just a few minutes, we're going to learn more about LSU Health in Shreveport, having 7 faculty members who were named top researchers. So stay to the show for some very interesting information for you and your loved ones. It is Saturday, August the 10th, and we are broadcasting our show from the studios of News Radio 710 Kiel, a Town Square media station here in wonderful Shreveport, Louisiana. However, today's show is not live and has been pre-recorded, so we will be unable to accept call-in questions and comments from our loyal radio listeners. Be sure to pick up the July-August issue of the Best of Times at one of our 270 distribution locations. I can't tell you where issues are available, but there are some available definitely at the Caddo Council on Aging, Bossier Council on Aging, and many of these 270 locations in our area. We do thank you for the many compliments about our magazine and this issue. We do appreciate hearing from you. Remember, if you're unable to pick up a printed copy at one of our 270 distribution locations, you can always visit our popular website at www.thebestoftimesnews.com to view both current and past issues of our magazine. In addition, you can view and download the 2024 Silver Pages Senior Resource Directory. In addition, you can listen to previously broadcast radio shows here on the Best of Times Radio Hour. In addition, you can download the app, the Best of Times app, on your Apple or Android devices to view the current and many past issues of the Best of Times magazine. Each and every month, the Best of Times sends out a TBT newsletter via an e-blast to over 73,000 email addresses of seniors and boomers living in Caddo and Bossier parishes of Louisiana. It provides them with links to our current issue, as well as they can read our current and view our current Silver Pages Senior Resource Directory. In addition, there are extensive number of educational articles that were not included in our printed magazine. We have discounts and coupons and a contest always, and of course, news that you can use. Join the many thousands who are receiving this free TBT newsletter via their email free of charge. Just visit our website at thebestoftimesnews.com to subscribe free of charge just by giving your email address. Great news, our friends at Ernest Arlene's has brought back the Best of Times special dinner each and every Thursday from 4:30 p.m. to closing with fabulous meals at a highly discounted price along with entertainment and free valet parking. It is highly recommended due to the popularity of this Best of Times Thursday night special to make advance reservations by calling 318-226-1325. Again, that's 318-226-1325. We'll be right back with more information, but now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Kiel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and Hebert's Tenant Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM at 710 Kiel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Tenant Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I'm Gary Kaligas. I do thank you for taking time to listen to our radio show today. Joining me on my show as a very special guest and friend is Dr. Sherry Ann Nathan, who's the chair and professor of otolaryngology, a tough one, ENT, to discuss the recent announcement of seven LSU Healthcare Shreveport faculty members being named top researchers. And Dr. Nathan was one of those. So thank you for joining us today here on the Best of Times Radio Hour.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, again, I want to congratulate you and all the other six recipients, surgeons, and physicians who got this amazing award. I mean, I know I'm proud. I know the many of the citizens and patients and LSU faculty and students and alumni, everybody was really proud to hear this particular now. It's a big accolade, isn't it, Dr. Nathan?
Yes, absolutely. We were really pleasantly surprised to make it to the list of Avangarde Health Research Awards. And this award honors outstanding surgeons whose contributions to healthcare research significantly enhance the quality of patient care. And it's based on hospital-based procedures and, you know, many other factors that they take into account.
So, Dr. Nathan, I was reading it's 4,000 hospitals. Does that mean all in the United States or throughout the world?
It's the United States.
Just the United States.
Yeah.
I thought there were more than 4,000 hospitals. But 90,000 surgeons were included? Wow, that's a lot of surgeons to be included in this particular research. So, again, with 4,000 hospitals and 4,000 research departments, to be ranked in the top 1 to 5% of all of those is a big accolade. I'm sure you're competing against the big Johns Hopkins and the Mayo Clinics and all the others in the world, in the United States, right? The big, I hate to call them the Beccas, but the big ones, right?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, when this list came out, I researched some of the other otolaryngology head and neck surgeons that come from many of these major institutions. And, you know, we were really so
and they know
excited.
You, and they know you. They may not remember where you're from or LSU or Shreveport, Louisiana. That's the other thing. Shreveport, Louisiana got mentioned, you know, at least seven times, you know, LSU Health in Shreveport, Louisiana, not New Orleans or Baton Rouge or whatever. It's in Shreveport.
So yeah, no, really. I think LSU Shreveport is actually known in academic circles because, you know, of the publications, investigator-initiated research. And, you know, I do want to brag that on this list there are three from the Department of Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery that I'm really proud of.
So mention their names. Of course, we mentioned your name. And you were the chair and professor in that department, the head and neck specialty, right?
Yes.
And who are the other two doctors?
And so the others in our department were Dr. Amir Asarkar, who is assistant professor in the Department of Otolaryngology, Head and Neck Surgery, and director of robotic head and neck surgery.
Oh, robotics. Okay, I didn't know he was.
Of head and neck robotic surgery.
I bet that's interesting.
Yeah. And then we have Dr. Pang, who's also assistant professor of otolaryngology, head and neck surgery, and he's the fellowship director for head and neck cancer as well. And so the three are from our department, and should I mention the others from the institution? Dr. Brian Willis, who is now Gradus Professor of Neurosurgery, got mentioned for his work on spine surgery research. Dr. Alexander Gomelski, who's Chair and Professor of Urology, was also recognized. And from his department, there was also Dr. Nazi Kater, who's Associate Professor in the same department. And then finally in cardiology was Dr. Tariq Helmi, he's chief and professor of cardiothoracic surgery.
And one more was Brian.
I mentioned, Dr. Brian Willis from neurosurgery.
And he was in spine surgery.
Spine surgery.
So several of my listeners wanted me to ask you a few questions. And first of all, is it based upon just one research study that you and all these other six physicians and surgeons did? Or is it based upon multiple research studies?
I think it's based on multiple because they look at the quantity and the quality of the published studies. So, you know, there's impact factors for journals and citation index, and many of these factors depend on how many people actually read your publication.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what the exact criteria were, but it was based on the quality, number one, and then the quantity of publications.
So in telling our listeners, when you do a research study, it could come out with an outcome saying, this is not a good treatment, this is not a good therapy, this is not a good procedure. Could it?
Absolutely. I mean, this is why clinical trials have four phases. You know, whenever you come up with something new, the phase one is where you're just looking at the safety and the dose finding of what, if we're talking about a drug. There's, of course, clinical trials, not just with drugs, but there's medical devices, there's behavioral clinical trials, but related to a drug, which is the most common, you have the phase one. And then phase two is looking at efficacy and then continuing to look at side effects. Once you know the drug is efficacious, then you do your larger trials, phase three, where you're comparing it to standard of care.
Okay.
And making sure that new drug is better than what the standard of care is. And those are typically randomized and double-blinded studies. And then phase four is, once it's FDA approved, they continue to monitor for long-term side effects. So clinical trials do take a long time. And during these phases, most of the trials actually don't even make it to phase three.
Wow. Most of them do.
Yeah. In fact, you know, now if you look at immune, being a cancer surgeon, I keep up with, you know, the literature and on cancer work in head and neck. So, for instance, immunotherapy now is what is the buzzword for clinical trials in cancer. It works well for lung, it works well for melanoma, but in head and neck, upper aerodigestive, only 15 to 20% of patients actually benefit. And these companies have done major phase three trials, spending millions and millions of dollars to ultimately find it was not better than standard of care.
So 15% is not adequate enough for to have that particular therapy, correct?
Yeah, and again, it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for just improvement in overall survival, and say you have a cancer and your survival is going to be 4 months, but you improve that survival to 1 year, that could be significant. So the trial looks significant. But I think in the U.S., with the healthcare costs, we've got to look at, you know, is it truly beneficial when you weigh all those various factors?
Quite interesting. So, but going back, let's ask a simple question. How do you determine getting funding, or who determines a research study? Do you as a doctor, or you as a researcher, do you submit it to the hierarchs in, I'm sure, D.C. or somewhere, the national, which one? I can't remember the agency.
NCI?
They say yes or no when you come up with an idea for a clinical research study?
So there's many routes to get clinical trials funded. So the first is the conception of the idea. You know, you see a clinical problem and you come up with a question.
So you see one isolated incident or you see multiple?
Normally it's multiple, you know, and it's a problem and you say, God, I've got to fix it. So I'll give you an example. Like, I have initiated two investigator-initiated trials at LSU.
Okay.
One of them is for prevention of cancer. So patients who smoke or chew tobacco, they land up with a lot of whitish plaques in the mouth that we call leukoplakia. Some of these are going to progress to cancer and some don't, but many of them progress. But the entire mouth is filled with these lesions. And so, you know, how do you treat this, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of studies looking at prevention. So my work was on curcumin chewing gum because they have tried various drugs. You know, they've tried retin A, retinoic acid, so many drugs to prevent these lesions from progressing. I heard, for instance, that turmeric,
Turmeric,
yes. It's called curcumin. The ingredient curcumin prevents cancer was being studied as a cancer preventive and had worked for colon cancer. So curcumin is not well absorbed, or turmeric is not well absorbed, and it sits in the feces, bathes the mucosa of the colon and prevents colon cancer. So I thought, why not make a chewing gum where patients who have these precancerous lesions in the mouth can chew turmeric and it stays in the mouth and, you know, bathes the mucosa, and maybe we can prevent it. So that was an idea, right?
Okay.
So I had to get funding for that idea, and I applied for the Louisiana, the LIFT grant, which I think was started in Baton Rouge to fund investigators with new ideas, mm-hmm. came up with, you know, had a company make chewing gum. It was first Doug Boudreau here who made my initial one for healthy volunteers.
Oh.
And then when I wanted to go bigger scale, I worked with somebody in Baton Rouge to do the first phase trial to prove that it was safe and that I was getting better levels of absorption with the chewing gum. So I don't know if that's too long, but like another clinical trial
On that gum, did you have to try various volumes or enough of turmeric? You probably put a little, and you kept that. That could be a major research right there. Correct?
Yes, absolutely. So that's why that was like the phase one, where you look at dose escalation and you want to see, you know, how much chewing gum in the curcumin do you need to chew to get a better blood level of curcumin in the blood.
Oh, so you know it by taking blood tests.
Yes, in many cases for drugs you do want it.
And turmeric is also an indicator to determine how much is in your bloodstream?
That was one of the goals we wanted to. And of course, how much is in the tissue itself. So we also took biopsies and measured using something called HPLC, the amount of turmeric in the actual lining of the mouth. So, yeah. And then the other trial, which has actually been, I think, work that I'm recognized for probably in the avant-garde, is head and neck squamous cell cancer patients present often with advanced stage disease. And after these long surgeries, you know, removing the tongue, the lymph nodes, reconstructing, almost 50 to 60% of patients recur, and they recur locally.
Recurring.
For the advanced stage patients. And so it was very frustrating, you know, to be one of these head and neck surgeons and see your patients recurring in the first 2 to 3 years. That's actually what brought me to the U.S. from India, because I thought, wow, we're not practicing state-of-the-art medicine, and realize recurrence was the same here when I came to Hopkins, when I first came to the U.S. And so I realized it's important to do research, and that is what has driven my passion for research.
Oh, that's
to make
important,
a
too,
difference.
Having the passion.
So when I came to LSU, I hypothesized that even though the pathologist says we're taking out all the cancer and the microscope, so histologic level, at the molecular level, we are leaving cancer cells behind.
Oh, okay.
And with one of the biochemists in Shreveport at LSU, Dr. Ricky DeBenedetti, we identified that there was something called EIFOE that was causing the cancer to progress in these surgical margins. So I found a drug that actually targeted this pathway, called the company Wyeth when I first started my research, and they helped me conduct the first phase zero clinical trial here for head and neck patients. And that trial was just to see, does their drug actually inhibit, prevent the mm-hmm. pathways, like decrease expression of this gene that is making the cancer come back. And so we did that and got really good results. And so then I had to do the second phase two trial to see, now, can I actually make a difference in our cancer patients? So I then called Novartis to fund the trial, even though this was investigator-initiated, started by myself here in Shreveport, and I collaborated with University of Chicago. And Novartis funded that trial because we enrolled 16 other institutions and randomized patients after they finished their treatment. One got placebo, and the other got this drug for 1 year. And then we followed them out to see, did we prevent the progression recurs, free? And we found that we did in significantly in patients who had HPV negative tumors. That's a virus that causes HPV positive. This is the group that doesn't do well, HPV negative. So, you know, if it wasn't for that idea 20 years ago, identifying this gene that's then causing cancer recurrence and then working with companies. I also applied for NIH funding and I got an R01, $2 million grant to do all the work on the samples, the blood samples, the tumor samples to see what was happening. The company sponsored the trial. So I think there's various ways to do it. Most trials are industry sponsored. That is the company.
I didn't know that. I thought it was governmental research.
No. Most trials are industry sponsored. Government research is also significant. But industry, I think, may be higher.
But industry wants it for their various drugs, procedures, or et cetera. Is that right?
Right. And then once they come up with some, then they reach out to different institutions to ask you to enroll patients on their trials.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be right back with more information, but now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Kiel. Proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Town and Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel. And now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Stunning Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I'm Gary Caligas. I do thank you for taking time to listen to our show today. Joining me on my show as a special guest is Dr. Sherianne Nathan, who is the chair and professor of otolaryngology. That's a tongue twister right there. If you can't see that, you've got a problem with your vocal cords or your tongue.
Articulation.
And I've asked her to come on our show to discuss about the recent announcement that 7 LSU faculty members were named top researchers, and Dr. Nathan was one of those remarkably talented researchers that got this particular national award, and we're so proud of them and proud of LSU and proud of your department. And she also bragged that there were 3 people in her department of these seven physicians. So again, we congratulate you. We congratulate all of the researchers and everything that LSU Health is doing, making our new physicians, because there's a lot of need for physicians out there. Isn't that the truth?
Absolutely. Huge shortage.
And more and more retiring, and there need to be new physicians, and you know, populations increase. I mean, I always feel sorry, Dr. Nathan, about back when I was in the healthcare, the rural areas, the lack of care, because the physicians who I met there were wonderful, but I could see they were exhausted.
Yeah.
I mean, it was totally exhausted. Being a solo practitioner in a rural area, and he or she is the only physician in that area to treat thousands and thousands of patients.
Absolutely. And then no access to specialty care. Telemed has improved that.
Yes, it has.
Somewhat.
That is true. And I'm hope that, I mean, back in the 80s and 90s when I was involved, I promoted that, and my federal friends were like, no, they have to see it in person. I said, what's the difference? What's really? You know, I'm not a clinician, and I kept telling these experts in D.C., you know, what does it matter if you can see a great television, you can visualize, and you can take, and they, you know, they were like skeptical. I don't know why they were thinking that physicians that might be in a remote area might abuse the system, you know, that kind of scenario.
Yeah, no, I think that was one good thing that came out of COVID, that the government approved telemed. I think a lot has to do with, you know, reimbursement, a lot has to do with legal issues, because there are certain things you have to get your hands on. You've got to be able to palpate it and, you know, see it, the color, the feel. But for a lot of things, it's all numbers and scans and hearing the story. And so it definitely, you know, has changed access on rural care.
Healthcare has changed since I've been involved in 1977 until now. Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm over 50 years ago. I can tell you a lot of stories, Doc. I mean, it's amazing what has come. You know, I was a investigator for the federal government, if you knew that. And I was responsible for investigating all quality of care in every hospital in the state of Louisiana.
Oh, wow.
For 12 years. So I had like 900 people working for me, but dictates from Baltimore and all that kind of stuff. That's a side story. We can talk about that a later time. So we were discussing, the question is, how are research studies formulated? And most of it, Dr. Nathan, I summarize, sometimes it's the physician or surgeon sees an incident more than once and wants to do something. And you mentioned you saw the recurrence of head and neck cancer in patients after surgeries were done, right?
Yep.
And that instigated, you know, there's got to be something causing that, right?
Yeah. And that's most often how I think research ideas start. You see a recurring problem and you start to look for solutions and
out of the box, out of the normal standard of care, something that can be done. A turmeric, which, you know, you're from India, you know that's an item that's in a lot of food products, et cetera. When I visited, everything had turmeric, I think, ever I had there. It was great, though, to certain degrees, though. Gary doesn't like super spicy. You know that. Doesn't like super spicy. In moderation, it's still good for you, according to my experts.
But, you know, one would think, right, that's a benign food substance.
Yeah.
But even for that, when used for health purposes, you need to know what dose is important. So the Indians have it in their diet regularly from the time they're young. And so we know that prevents cancer. But when you take it in big capsules, nobody knows the right dose. Oh. So even though, for instance, I was doing a curcumin gum trial, I still had to go through the rigor of, you know, proving what dose is accurate. And I've never got to that process still. You know, I was only in my early phase trials. But for instance, when you put curcumin on precancer cells at a certain dose, it prevents it. But at different doses, you know, it can actually promote cancer.
Wow.
So, and this is, again, in cell culture, in a dish. But that is why, you know, one really has to study everything very rigorously. And the FDA has all these.
But Dr. Nathan, here's another sidebar. So when I visited India, which I don't know if you know, I went there for 3 weeks. Fascinating. I had some fascinating guides and fascinating people I met with. You know, Gary asked lots of questions. So I had to ask, is this the same Coumadin that we have in the States that you have in India? The answer by 99% of the people I talk with, absolutely no. They said theirs is tremendously better than the stuff we have in America. Is that true?
I don't know. Like the turmeric, I get my turmeric from the Indian groceries.
Well,
and I'm hoping it's the same.
Well, I'm sure they get it from India. I don't think they get it from the local manufacturer here in town. But they were telling me that, no, just like tea is not, you know, the teas are all different kinds of, especially in your country and China, they're much better in those countries than we get in America sometimes. So
export quality sometimes is different.
Yeah, that's true. So in continuing, let's talk about the definition of a clinical trial.
So a clinical trial is when you have taken a product, either a drug, a device, through the entire rigorous process of making a difference and changing outcomes in patient management.
And it's once it's designed and published and finalized, then you find individuals within a certain catchment area. And mention, I thought this was interesting. There's a website that I've got the title that will tell you what institutions this particular clinical trial, as you said, you involved other hospitals and other clinics, correct?
Yes. So, you can definitely have access to clinical trials on multiple websites. For cancer, for instance, the National Cancer Institute, NCI, the NIH, has their website which tells you about all the clinical trials going on in cancer. And then different, academic centers will also, cancer centers, advertise on their websites, what trials, ongoing trials they have.
So there's multiple sites, but possible only one site that could have a particular clinical trial. And then they seek volunteers. It's not a mandatory thing, right?
Yes, because every clinical trial, will have some risks. Maybe the risk is small, just drawing blood. But if it's a new drug they're testing, there can be most significant risks. And so you have to have informed consent where the patient understands every risk involved. The patient needs to know that the trial is also IRB approved. I think that's important.
What does IRB mean?
Investigative research body that basically looks at any clinical trial. It's made up of doctors, statisticians, and actually people in the community to make sure that it's gone through the rigorous process, the consent is being obtained, and that it's safe to whatever extent safety allows for that trial.
So I'm sure that when you do a clinical trial and you're seeking people to participate, either that taking the drug, taking the placebo, or taking the treatment, that you've done a few tests before it, you give open it to the public. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Everything starts first in a dish and cell culture. Then you go to animal studies.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Once safety and efficacy is seen in animal studies, then you take it to human studies in most cases.
And I'm sure you ask the volunteers from your medical students and interns and residents if they want to contribute to participate before we open this to the public, right?
Yeah, and again, it depends on the type. Obviously, if it's a drug with a lot of side effects for cancer, then you're giving it to cancer patients, not healthy volunteers, but everybody is a volunteer, and most people do it because they realize they are improving the outcomes, if not for themselves, but for patients. But there's an advantage to being, on a clinical trial, even for patients, because one is if this drug turns out to be beneficial, then you have already had the benefit of, being tested for it and knowing that that drug is going to work on you. But also, when you're part of a clinical trial, you have a lot of nurses and CRAs calling you and keeping track of every, blood draw. And everything has to be done exactly on time and by the books of what the clinical trial, or it's called the protocol, clinical trial protocol. And so I think, people want to be part of clinical trials to move the field forward.
Well, I'm disclosing this to all my listeners. I've been involved in several clinical trials. It was a great experience. But I'll tell you the negative past that not me, but some of my participants, Dr. Nathan, I had one lady that was so adamant when she came in that we were taking a particular drug. And when she was told that you will not know whether you're taking the placebo or the real drug. And she said, well, I want the real thing so it can help me. And I told, ma'am, I was intervened. I said, you can't. That defeat the purpose of the clinical trial, right?
Absolutely. I mean, if a trial, which we have mentioned, the phase 3, is normally randomized, you have to have any new drug randomized. Because otherwise, how do you know it's the effect of the drug and not, for instance, something in your food you're taking or another medication? So if you're not randomized, but I don't blame patients. I've had a lot of patients on my clinical trials who also don't want the placebo because it's a lot of time coming in to get your blood drawn. And, I think talking to nurses, filling up a lot of clinical trial forms, and people don't want to take that time if they're not getting the drug, but no research can move forward without...
But Dr. Nathan, tell our listeners out there, sometimes you have what's called, physicians call it, I think my son mentioned it to me, and it's happened to me, it's the placebo effect.
Yes.
That if you take in the placebo, it's not the drug, but it makes you feel better. And you say, wow, but it's the effect, right?
Absolutely.
It's psychological or whatever you, but it's worked. I'll go offline and tell you about one about on a cruise ship that I helped a doctor give out placebos, and everybody congratulated me and the doctor for curing their illness. And it was candy. And Gary, the non-doctor, was passing them out because his assistant got severely ill.
Oh my God!
and I didn't get called up for anybody. You know, being a non-physician, I was a home health administrator, passing out particular drugs to all these people for their nausea, vomiting, and seasickness. So it was really interesting.
You know, the placebo effect is a real thing and happens in a significant number of patients, which is why you have to.
I mean, and I gave up 500, maybe more than that. There was 3,000 people on this cruise ship. And all these five, most of them said, oh, you cured me. Thank you, Gary, for saving those drugs to give to us. We only had 500 candies, and we only had less than 50 the regular dosage. That was it. And he was panicky. He didn't know what to do, young physician. And I met him somewhere, and he says, you got to help me. And that's a long story.
So my grandfather, going offline again, was a physician in Africa, and he was, you know, a primary care doctor out with the Maasai tribe. And he said, you know, when women would come to him because they couldn't get pregnant, he would give them a vitamin shot. And then one woman got pregnant, had nothing to do with it. But then the entire Maasai tribe was at his store beating the drums.
How touching. He helped. He helped increase the population, and they have children now. Wow. Well, hold that thought. We'll be right back with more information. But now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Dun & Country, Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Dun & Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. Joining me on my show today is a special guest, is Dr. Sherry Ann Nathan, who is the Chair and Professor of Otolaryngology. Boy, I'm getting worse at this, to discuss the recent announcements of seven LSU faculty members who were named top researchers in the United States. So again, thank you, Dr. Nathan, for joining us, and congratulations again on being one of those seven LSU faculty that received this particular honor. We're very proud. I know all the citizens in Shreveport and Bossier and surrounding area in northwest Louisiana are quite proud of your accomplishments and this award.
Thank you so much, Gary.
So Dr. Nathan was explaining to me and my listeners about clinical trials, and another reason why some people participate, I never look at it when I've been in like four, and there is compensation occasionally for participating in some studies. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely, because it is time of, you know, someone who's coming to participate, travel, taking time off from work. And so to be able to get some healthy volunteers, many of the companies will offer, funds to compensate for the time involved.
Well, and that's, you know, good.
I think that's fair.
It's fair, especially. And that but mention that sometimes these clinical trials, I've heard people said they didn't accept me. There's some initial online and going by to visit that you may not meet the criteria they're looking for, correct?
Right. So once a clinical trial is, you know, starting to develop, they will have inclusion criteria and exclusion criteria. Inclusion is basically who all are allowed to be part of the trial. And it depends on the disease, it depends on what they're looking for, the age, what are the other medications
people are on.
If there's, you know, there's an age limit a lot of times in clinical trials. And in the past, the age common age group allowed was 18 to 65. But really, people need to know for people older than 65, what are the, is this drug going to work? The reason they wouldn't include the older people was because they have multiple medications
they are on. I didn't think
and of that. So then you don't know about the interactions and what's really causing the effect. So there's a lot of inclusion criteria. And then blood work. If you've already got, you know, blood work that prevents you from being part of the trial. So if a drug shows there's an increase in cholesterol or a thyroid problem, then if someone already has one of those pre-existing problems, you can be part of the clinical trial. Very commonly, liver function tests, kidney function tests, you know, your blood counts. A lot of those are basic values for...
The reason you don't want them, but you don't want them to have serious other risk factors. That's
correct.
The safety involved.
It's the safety.
And drug interactions are amazing in this day and age.
Yeah.
People, I mean, I meet with my readers and some of my radio listeners are taking 26 prescription medicines. And I said, have all your doctors reviewed all these 26? And especially if that person wants to join a clinical trial, I'm sure she or he is going to have an interesting time of passing that criteria, correct?
Absolutely. And like the exclusion criteria will depend on what they're looking for, you know, in the efficacy. So for cancer clinical trials, sometimes we'll exclude somebody who already has just had another cancer.
Okay.
And so there's various, depending on the trial, depending on the device, you know, there's various inclusion and exclusion criteria.
But now it's so automated, you can go online and then I'm sure the researcher coordinator calls and asks you to visit to make sure you answered all the questions correctly and et cetera, right?
Yeah, that's called like the screening process.
Okay.
Because they'll first screen you to see if you even qualify for the clinical trial before they enroll you in the trial.
Is there a limit on number of participants in a given clinical study?
Yes, absolutely. So for any trial to be proven, they first always have a statistician calculate the sample size, like how many participants do you need to show the effect of this drug, that this treatment is going to make a difference. And so the sample size is a very big part of the clinical trials. In fact, that is one of the problems in clinical trials. Companies will enroll many institutions to get to the sample size.
Okay, that's why they have multiple.
Yeah, because you need for phase 3 and 4, you need thousands of people to be able to tell if something works. And a lot of times it takes so long to get clinical trials through every institution because it has to go through the IRB process that can be long. Then you have to go through the vetting process with the hospital to determine who's paying for what is standard of care, and whether your insurance should cover it or whether the company is going to cover it or your whoever's sponsoring your clinical trial. So a lot of times, by the time you get the clinical trial started, actually standard of care has changed.
Really?
And so one of the very well-known trials in head and neck cancer patients was known as the de-escalate trial. Chemotherapy, we use cisplatinum commonly with radiation as a radiosensitizing agent. Mm-hmm. And there was a targeted agent called cetuximab, which targets a particular receptor, EGFR receptor, that worked beautifully when compared to radiation alone. However, by the time the company got all the institutions on board and patients enrolled in the trial, the standard of care had already changed to not radiation alone, but cisplatinum with radiation. And so when they finally did the true comparison of cisplatin, this drug didn't really
help
pan out, but people had already started using it. So clinical trials is really such a time-consuming and lengthy process. My own trial over here, mm-hmm. by the time I got 16 institutions to participate, enrolled patients, took almost 10 years.
10 years?
And people had moved, investigators at different institutions had moved. So I had to start with new investigators at the same institution. Finally, the company, the patent on the drug had expired. And then the company is no longer interested in sponsoring the trial once the patent expires.
Because they don't have the exclusive rights to it.
Correct. Huh? And so then they don't want to invest the money in your trial. So they asked me to close down the trial. Luckily, I still was able to get enough of data out of it, even though I never reached my sample size. So sample size calculation, to go back to your question.
So tell listeners out there, how can they can contact LSU Research Department to find out what the various clinical studies and research and the participants, is that correct?
Yeah, I think if you go to the website, and depending on, you know, what disease or what you're interested in, or if you're just a healthy volunteer wanting to know what is novel out there, any new technology, absolutely, you can go to the website. There's a clinical trials page. The Cancer Center, the Feistweiler Cancer Center, has a clinical trials page that you can go to.
And you know, it's important. That's a good volunteer aspect. I mean, I've heard from some of your other fellows that there is a lack of participants in our area, especially as there's a lack of African American. We're more skewed toward the Caucasian. Is that
that is nationally?
Nationally,
LSU actually has the highest rate of participation of African Americans
in
the SWOG trial. So there's
big
push nationally to increase diversity, because you need to have, you know, different races, different age groups respond differently to drugs. So,
again, I congratulate you. And again, I hope everybody will consider participating in a clinical trial. It's great. I've done it 3 times. And sometimes you don't find out the outcome of it, but, you know, they're probably going on for 10 years. I can't even remember the 3 I'm involved with, but I know I did 3 of them. And one of them was a brain scan of something at LSU we did, and in the neurology department. And the other one was a drug, and the other one, I don't remember. It must have been something long ago that I've participated in.
Strong citizenship there.
Well, thank you, Dr. Dathan. Thank you for joining us today again. I appreciate you coming again. Congratulations. Give my regards and best wishes to the other 7 faculty members. I know a couple of them there. Dr. Gominski has been on my show a couple of times, and he's totally remarkable. And when I got the notice, I sent him a congratulation note, so I hope he got it. So thank you again for joining us today. Best wishes to you for continued success in your department and all the other departments within the LSU Medical Center and LSU Ochsner. So thank you.
Thank you so much for featuring this.
Please, everyone, join our show next Saturday for more information that could benefit you or your loved ones. Don't forget to pick up your personal copy of The Best of Times at one of our 270 distribution locations. May God bless you and your family. God bless America. Have a great day and a great weekend. Thank you again for listening to our show today. I'm Gary Kaligas, wishing you and yours the best of times, both today and every day. Have a great day.